This episode of WDW Today is brought to you by Off to Neverland Travel, our travel planner partner. If you want to, that's hard to say, travel planner partner. If you want to get with them and get a vacation plan, go to their websites. Go to neverland.com. Will, what do they like to say?
All you got to do is pack your bags.
Now moving on, off to Neverland and go to neverland.com. Now, on with the show.
Give me a little intro there, Gomer.
Bringing the world to your world. This is WDW Today, coming to you from somewhere off property at the Laugh-O-Gram Studios, featuring Len Testa and the greatest band in podcasting, Off Kilter. Now here they are, Terry Weaver, the nature boy Will Haynes, and your host, Logan Seculo.
It's Wednesday, October 19th, 2016. This is episode 1535 of WDW Today. I'm Logan Seculo.
I'm Will Haynes.
I'm Terry Weaver.
And I wish we used fake names. Just kidding, guys. Not really. And welcome to WDW Today this week. Today, Terry just got back from... What? It's Terry's birthday. And you'll see where this present is later on in the show, which is pretty awesome. But Terry just got back from a long Disney weekend, but not to a Disney park. And maybe that's something we can talk about. Disney trips that aren't actually Disney trips. I think I've taken one. You've probably taken one, but let's go. Where'd you go?
I was in Kansas City, Missouri, speaking at a conference on last Saturday, and I decided to go in the day before. And the person that picked me up at the airport, we went to Marceline, Missouri.
Right. Hometown.
Hometown of Walt Disney.
He was born in Chicago, but moved there when he was a little boy. Lived there for, five or six years?
Yeah.
From like three or four to 7 or 8 years old. Definitely made a huge impact on his life. But you've been there. I have not been there. And I think we talked a little bit. Is one of the reasons I haven't been there yet is, number one, I haven't had the chance to go the trip. But maybe they don't sell it as well as they could.
That was my first thought as I was in the middle of the museum. I was like, wow, I would have come here much sooner had they told us like how fantastic it is. Because even just as I was going the day before, I was looking at the museum's website thinking, okay,
be there half.
This is going to be fun. I'm already here. I should go, right? Like, and it's like a two-hour drive through the middle of nowhere, Kansas.
Right. From a two-hour drive
Kansas City, right from the airport there. And the first place we went to is straight to the museum. And the museum is fantastic. It's not quite as good as the museum in San Francisco, which is his
but
family museum.
But you say it's even close, because that's amazing.
I was really expecting it to be one of the, like, okay, this is like Walt's cousin put this together, and there's like two things that are cool, and the rest right. is... But they had, you know, a bunch of models from Magic Kingdom. They had Walt's and Ub's animation desk from Peskin Rubin. I mean, they had a lot of anything that was kind of tied to Walt or the family that was from Kansas City and Missouri was all there.
But you got to also check out more Disney stuff while you were in Marceline, too.
Right. And what most people don't know is Main Street USA is inspired by Marceline. And one of my favorite things they had in the museum was kind of a model of Main Street. And then it showed pictures of where you could go on Main Street in Marceline. And, you know, kind of see which building and the hotel and which one it was done in the, what they call its Coke Corner, which was a watch shop that every train worker had to go and, like, get their watch set once a month in this place. But it was also, what if you look at Casey's Corner, you can definitely tell that, wow, Walt was definitely inspired by this. And being on Main Street USA was really cool there just to kind of see.
It's Main Street USA.
It's called Main Street USA.
Right.
And right off of Main Street USA is the, you know, they are very proud of the fact that Walt is from there. So the post office is Walt Disney Post Office. The elementary school is Walt Disney Elementary School.
Right.
And they made a big deal of welcoming Walt back when they did. And a lot of that was like featured in the museum. It had Walt's desk where he famously carved the WD in the desk, and it had the Midget Autopia car. That was the kind of the thing that Walt did for the city of Marceline. And then it just had some fun things kind of from his childhood history. And if you have seen As Dreamers Do It, they recreated the porch, and they had a child from Walt Disney Elementary School come in and paint in black paint on the side of the white siding of the Disney family house, which was kind of cool to see that in there.
That's awesome. And so you got to see the house. You said there's not many people out there, so it's kind of like you had your own.
And we went to Walt Disney, to basically Walt's backyard. And that was really, that was probably the one thing that totally blew me away, because, you know, Walt's house is there, and they kind of have like made it where you kind of go and you don't disturb them. And they've rebuilt his barn.
Disturb them because people live there.
People live there. But in his backyard, the barn, and that's where the famous Dreaming Tree was. And now there's the son of the Dreaming Tree.
That's because it recently was destroyed.
Yeah, this last spring, I believe.
Since we made the movie,
Since it got hit by lightning. And it was already pretty, it was just kind of...
In bad shape.
In bad shape already. It was barely green. But the barn was really cool. There was a little, I guess, pond. And I FaceTimed Logan from there. And I was amazed by the sounds that were there because it sounds... you could really see if you walk around the parks how inspired by Marceline Walt was, even just the way it sounded there, because it felt like I was on Tom Sawyer Island. It had the, it was like, did the Imagineers come to Walt's land and record the cricket sound before Disneyland's Pirates, as you're sitting in the Blue Bayou restaurant? It just very much, you could just tell that Walt really valued those years, that was probably the most formative years of his life. And he said, you know, it's his time in Marceline that he loved the most.
Yeah, looked back on most fondly. That was his childhood. So, all right. So Marceline, pretty good. Really worth the trip if you're going to be in the area.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you visited a few spots also in Kansas City.
Because I was in Kansas City, one of the things we did is I was doing an event in the Startup Village for entrepreneurs, speaking at during the day. And one of the guys there wanted to do like a tour. I have a talk that I do on Walt Disney and Walt Disney's failures and how resilient Walt was. And he's like, hey, dude, let's just end of the day and let's go over to Laugh-O-Gram and let's go see his house and then take the trip from Laugh-O-Gram to Union Station, where Walt famously got on the train to go to Hollywood. And it was probably the most depressing part of the trip was seeing Laugh-O-Gram, the Laugh-O-Gram building, and how much in disrepair it was. I know there's an organization called Thank You Walt Disney.
They've been trying,
but man, they haven't even bothered to get the building on the register of like National Historic landmarks, which I would think would open a ton of grant money and a ton of opportunities.
I don't know that for history, them. But we looked at, we're obviously, we own the trademark to Laugh-O-Gram Studios. That's what you hear at the beginning of the show each week. The reason it's Laugh-O-Gram Studios, I think I talked about in the commercial breaks, actually, because we sell Laugh-O-Gram merchandise, because no one even owned the brand. We decided to adopt the brand as our own after we made As Dreamers Do, as sort of this place where people could come and create things, fail, succeed, whatever it is. And to see the building like that is sad, and I wish that they would get the stuff together and make it happen. I know Diane Disney had given some money. I think the Walt Disney Company had given some money.
If I was a predicting man, the building's got maybe 3 to 5 years, or it's just, I mean, they've kind of shirred it up, but I mean, you can see, particularly on the far wall where we're not facing the street, but the far wall where Walt would have actually worked.
Right.
Where the famous scene we recreated in the movie of Walt sitting in his desk with the Laugh-O-Gram posters on the wall.
Right.
That wall is just one Category 1 tornado.
Yeah, and I think part of that I don't think is even original already. Like, you said, maybe we put the bricks back.
Right.
But when they got the building, it was pretty much the second floor was gone.
I really hope that somebody with some money comes along, or maybe some knowledge can come along and help them really take that over the finish line, because it needs it. So we went to, right down the street from there is Walt's elementary school there, which was cool to see. It's now a nursing home. And we went to Walt's home there, which is just a random home on the street that random people are living in, in Kansas City.
In a not particularly great area.
Great neighborhood. It's on Zillow. It says that's for $52,000. So if anybody wants to come up with some money, we'll offer the people $100,000 and see if we can have Walt Disney's home in Kansas City. I don't know what we'll turn it into, but...
Yeah.
Maybe. You run that yourself.
Yep. Speaking of that, though, if you're going to take a trip like this, I know you haven't done it yet, and I haven't seen it myself, but our friends own the Walt Disney Birthplace in Chicago. That thing is in major reconstruction. It looks great on the outside. You may have seen a little video of Dick Van Dyke singing. We were with Dick Van Dyke up until that day, actually. They were making a documentary about him, about his trip back home to Danville, Illinois. But if you're in Chicago, it's another kind of Walt stop you can make that is not necessarily the parks. Same with in California. So many great places you can go if you are in the LA area, whether you want to stop at his old house, which was going to be demolished but now is on the registration, or you can go have lunch at his favorite place. A lot of great things to do if you're a Disney fan and just don't want to be in the parks. I'd love to hear you guys' suggestions as well. So hit us up on Twitter with your thoughts.
Yeah, you can. The barn behind the house is where Walt really.
Well, the barn's gone. The barn, they moved to. It's actually.
No, the barn in Kansas City.
Oh, Kansas City. Sorry, so, I thought you meant the one in.
Which is really where Walt and Roy kind of started messing with that before they moved to California.
Sorry, I thought you meant the barn that was in the California house.
No.
That is now in Griffith Park, I believe.
Griffith Park, yeah. Yeah, the Candlewood, the Carrollwood Pacific.
The Carrollwood, yeah.
The garage, I meant, not the barn. Yeah. I'd love to hear from anyone that listens that would maybe possibly interested in getting together some kind of group, see if there's some interest in doing a trip that started in Chicago and went through Marceline and into Kansas City. Just kind of a waltz. See if anyone wants.
I want to do it. I've never done it. I've always wanted to see it. Also, that would be great. Maybe we could get some people together and do it, because it is, for us in Nashville, it's like, all right, I got to fly to Kansas City. Then it, for you, it made sense. Like, if I had to be in Kansas City, I would do it. But without a reason to go, it's a little, I'm still hard for me to justify, all right, them to land and drive 2 hours to a little town it's been a half a day in.
I had really low expectations because I really didn't know what to expect. And I was really blown away. And John, my friend, the friend who actually designed the Top of the World podcast logo for us, and he was blown away too by just everything with Marceline. And just, he's like, man, I'm bringing my family out here. Maybe next weekend, because it was just so...
It's only open seasonally, right?
It's only open kind of like early spring through the end of October.
Because it gets too cold.
It gets too cold, I guess, you know. I think they just don't have the manpower. She said they've had about 13,000 people come through this summer. That's their record year, which doesn't seem like that many. And it seems like, honestly, they should have had... It's good enough that thousands of people should be there.
It's just hard to get there.
One of the cool things we did is we dined at a place, just a random restaurant, but on Main Street USA. It was kind of cool to be like on Main Street USA. And there was a picture where Walt had come there to dedicate. He previewed one of his live action.
Yeah, the train.
The
locomotive, something.
Oh, yeah.
One of those.
One of those movies he previewed there. Yeah, it was just really cool. It very much... You know, if you're nostalgic at all, you always, when you go to Disneyland, you feel this little Walt nostalgia. And this was like that times 10,000. If you enjoy Disney nostalgia.
It's the whole town.
It's the whole town.
It's
yeah.
What they love there. It's kind of like going to Metropolis or Superman, but even actually a connection to the source material, unlike Metropolis, which is just like, well, it's called Metropolis, which is fun. Go up to Superman weekend. All right, cool. Well, we're going back to listener questions with Lynn. And Terry gets a very special gift. Terry is going to read all of the questions. All right, you heard Terry talk about Laugh-O-Gram. He visited there. And Laugh-O-Gram Studios is what you're hearing right now. So this is the latest iteration of Walt Disney's original dream right here. Can you believe it? I don't know if he'd be proud or not, but you know what? It's a place where people can try new things, do new things. We got movies coming out, documentaries, television shows, new podcasts, and some new things coming up in the next couple weeks. But right now, if you want to rep Laugh-O-Gram, you can right now go to laughogramstore.com, pick up a latest piece of Laugh-O-Gram merchandise, some great, really cool stuff with a vintage logo. You're going to dig it. That's at laughogramstore.com. Now, on to listener questions with Lynn.
It's time for listener questions with Lynn.
All right, it's time for listener questions with Lynn. And Terry, it's your birthday. Not when they're hearing this, but when we're recording this. It's actually your birthday. So happy birthday. And because of that, we've made you designated reader to read every question for listener questions this week.
Because I'm probably the worst at it.
So probably.
Perfect.
All right, let's go ahead. Let's start off.
Nothing like a good birthday shaming.
Because usually the three of us have like a sheet with all of them in front of us, and I have no idea where these questions are going to go. So
yeah, you're the ones answering them.
Right. Let's have some fun.
Oh my God, this is entertaining. Yeah.
This is how I feel. I feel like Lynn now. So. All right.
Scott Border wants to know, what are the can't miss places at Disney Springs for dessert, store, or et cetera?
Okay, dessert. Let's start with dessert then.
Okay. I really like both of the cake offerings at Art Smith's Homecoming. One of them is this the moonshine cake. Have you guys tried this?
Terry just went to Homecoming.
Try that?
I tried the other cake,
the other one.
The one with the pineapple in it.
Yeah, like the hummingbird
cake. The hummingbird cake, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Those are both fantastic.
In fact, I enjoyed Art Smith's Homecoming altogether.
I did too. I thought it was great. I liked the fried chicken a lot. I thought the pork barbecue was just okay, but I think we've talked about this on the show before. I live down the street.
Yeah, you can't make good park barbecue. It just doesn't really exist.
Yeah, I mean, we all learn this out.
Yeah.
You
know what my favorite thing on the menu was? It really wasn't a menu item. It was the hot sauce, which I was really wanting to get bottled because Will's a hot sauce fan. And I was like, I'm going to get Will a bottle. And they didn't have a bottle of it.
They tried to accommodate you and give you a little.
They tried to give me a carafe to take some home.
That's still nice. Really? It's still nice.
Carafe. Like giant size? No, like a ramekin.
A ramekin. Like a little thing.
Yeah.
I also tried on my last trip, I tried the cupcakes over at Sprinkles. Have you guys tried those yet?
Not from that location. I've had a Sprinkles before. Cupcake. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think I found them in Las Vegas with the ATM like cupcake dispensing device.
Yeah.
Nice.
Which is the thing I find interesting about Sprinkles is their vanilla and chocolate and strawberry cupcakes are pedestrian. It's the ones that are the unusual flavors that you would never think to put in a cupcake that tend to be the best. For me, this last trip, it was the olive oil and rosemary cupcake.
All right.
Like you never think savory cupcake, right?
Yeah, it doesn't sound good.
No, it was, but it was.
I like both.
Sounds like something you'd see on like Chopped.
Yeah.
Like if you're forced to make it.
Yeah, right. Forced to eat it. I think the reason for that is the icing is so sweet that for your traditional sweet cupcakes, it's just too much. Like your brain and your mouth can't process all the sweet. But when you mix savory and sweet together, it works a little bit better. It's worth a shot.
My brain can process quite a lot.
What about that giant cake thing at Boathouse?
The giant cake thing at Boathouse is also very good. It's just, so there's two of them, right? They do a rainbow cake and then they do a baked Alaska. Yes. Both of them are good. It's, the novelty is more in the size than in the quality of the food. They're not like them both enough. The other thing I think in terms of both cakes and frozen desserts, have you guys tried the milkshakes over at Deluxe Burger?
I haven't been there yet. No, not yet. I've heard great things.
Well, they're fantastic. But you know that scene in Pulp Fiction where John Travolta wants to know what a $5 milkshake tastes like?
Yeah.
It's like that, but imagine a $15 milkshake.
Oh. Nice.
Well, and they have that over at Toothsome's right now at Universal, and the milkshakes are kind of bad. So if you're trying to decide which milkshake to go with, sounds like the Deluxe Burger is the one to go with.
And are they really 15?
They're $12 to $15. I think the $15 ones have alcohol in them. But Laurel and I each had a burger and a milkshake. Laurel's had alcohol in it, and I think it was $53. No, $62.
Nice.
Shake. It ain't steak and shake, folks.
But amazing though.
Yeah.
They're both very good. I mean, I didn't finish either of them. And they were both very good. And I think it was 45 actually, but still, I mean, you're talking about $15 per item for the four items that we had. Right. So I had the cake batter milkshake, and it was so sweet as to I couldn't finish it. And keep in mind that when Cold Stone first opened, I would order the cake batter with Kit Kat and chocolate and Twix bars mixed into my cake batter to make it more
cake batter aficionado. Because usually I was going to say the same things. Like it's usually too sweet for me even at like a Cold Stone. But you love it in general,
and it was too sweet even then. The other place I think I like, and it's more portion controlled, is Amaretto's patisserie over at the town center, where you can buy like, you know, a cookie if you wanted a cookie. Yeah.
I like the giant Ghirardelli cookies too.
Well, I was going to bring up Ghirardelli because I'm kind of a simple dessert kind of guy. I like just going to get a hot fudge sundae at the Ghirardelli place.
And that place is rated really high by unofficial Goodreads. I mean, like 98%, 99%. If it was a restaurant, it would be number one every year.
But my wife and I were in the sugar carb eating. That would be our go-to. It would be those giant, they're almost salty cookies. They're great. All right. So what else did he ask for?
Store. Must go to store at Disney Springs. My wife loves Trendy, which is next to the co-op, which kind of has all of the cooler girls line of clothing.
All right. That's over in the marketplace.
In the marketplace. I love the co-op just because there's all the little stores there.
I mean, it depends if you're a Disney, like, are you going for a Disney stuff? Or are you going for, because I mean, they now have like a whole mall. I like the Christmas store that's there. I like that one. You get some cool stuff there that you can't get really anywhere else on property. Everything else, like World of Disney, that's great, but it's just giant, 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 which is fun to walk through.
So, Lynn, I'm going to go off question here because I'm a little interested in your opinion on this. When you go like to the mall section of Disney Springs now, is that going to work? Like when I was there, There were people there, but I didn't see anyone buying anything.
It's a strange mix of retail places for a couple of reasons. One is, if you look at the women's, the stores that are targeted to women, Lily Pulitzer
Anthropology.
Place. Yeah, Anthropology, Lily Pulitzer, Kate Spade, things like that. They're selling way more accessories and shoes than they are clothing. So the merchandise definitely skews that way, which you kind of understand, right? You're not really going to Disney World to buy, you know, your fall wardrobe.
Right.
But if you see an accessory that you like, it's probably a better or an easier to rationalize impulse purchase. The thing that some of the stores, though, I simply don't understand. Like, there's the one, there's one store in there that specializes in Hawaiian themed jewelry.
Yeah, like, who is this appealing to? Right.
Yeah,
now?
Like, what I mean, impulse so wise. Yeah, I mean, it's yeah, it's,
that's
it's
Nahoku. Is that the one you're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah, like I woke up this morning and realized I needed a chain with a dolphin on it. I don't.
Well, the other emerald inlaid.
Now, saying some of the clientele I see at Disney World occasionally, that may be what they wake up and think.
Sure, sure. The other place that's strange is the eyeglass place, because
yeah,
it's not like a 24-hour place. You have to wait 7 days to get your glasses back.
What?
So if you're a tourist,
why would you do it?
Right. So some of those places make sense more as a store for locals than they do for tourists. But if that's the case, why would you pay what's got to be higher rent at Disney Springs?
Right. Yeah, I don't understand. I guess if there's not a mall in that area of Orlando, and that area
and there is.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, but maybe with those stores, I don't know.
The one place I found interesting was the place that was like a Japanese Old Navy place. I don't know if you know the place I'm talking about. It has like
Uniqlo.
Yes, that place.
Japanese Love Old it. Navy. That was Love a war. That was World Uniqlo. War II.
Yeah.
They had a bunch of cool like Mickey shirts, like a whole section of those, and then just
we're not fans of the Japanese Old Navy. No, by the way,
the current Navy is fine.
We bombed the old Navy.
See, you perfected the joke. Yeah. See, I had the premise
you
down.
Had the that's why you and I are good together.
I couldn't get the punchline
because
out.
I can perfect your genius ideas. Move on with Uniqlo.
Yeah, Uniqlo is fast fashion. It's stuff that you know, the trend came out last week and it's already in stores this week. So very fast turnover of stuff. Very trendy, very young. A lot of skinny jeans in colors like mustard.
Yeah, that's something I'm clipping. Very trendy, very young, skinny jeans, mustard.
It appeals to a lot of our audience, I'm sure.
The thing that I've been telling people is like, look, if you ever find yourself losing all of your carry-on and all of your checked baggage, and you find yourself only with $70 left in Walt Disney World and you're naked, that's where you go to build your wardrobe out. Because for $70, you could buy like 12 outfits.
All right, good to know. I mean, I haven't been over there yet. I've seen it when it was in construction, but I haven't gone over there. Man, the eyeglass thing is where it's throwing me off. Maybe you're right. Maybe, I mean, City Walk had some of that where they were trying to appeal to locals. And look, when we were locals, we would go to City Walk all the time. So maybe they're trying to bring the same with Pleasure Island. Maybe they're trying to bring a little bit of that back, but through shopping, through retail, I don't know.
It's, at some point, when Disney decided that they were going to double the number of shops, there are only a finite number of very good, appropriate retail.
Right.
They might have filled out 80% of it with what they wanted, and then 20% was like, sure, come on along, dolphin jewelry guy.
Sugar Boo.
Guy Harvey.
Guy Harvey.
Something silver.
Did they have a Guy Harvey? There was a Guy Harvey store, wasn't there at one point? No, I'm thinking of who is the artist that used to be in the Polynesian?
But still the boardwalk.
What's his name? He does like the whales.
Wyland.
Yeah, Wyland. Yeah.
All 5 seconds from Wyland.
All love for Wyland. Actually, maybe I have some of his pieces. So
I think that was Scott Wyland, but yeah. Not the dolphin guy. But okay.
All right. Next question.
It says I'm reading them all.
Yep.
Amanda Milton wants to know, can you book FastPass Plus 60 days from your property hotel reservation, or is it 60 days from your first day in the park? Our hotel reservation is for 12:29, but our first day in the park is 12:30. What daytime would we have access to our reservations?
It's based on the hotel reservation, right. Actually.
Oh, that's a great.
Because you don't reserve your day you go to the park. Like when you buy a ticket.
Yeah, Disney has no idea how you're going to be using your
tickets.
If you have 5 days, but you're only, you're there 7.
But I feel like that's probably a common thing in people's heads. They're like, oh, it's 30 days because I'm not going to the park until then, not thinking that actually 24 hours before sometimes they may need to. Logan's choking on water.
I couldn't believe this fact. All right. Terry.
Dee Dee Duncan asks, okay, finally here when you ask. I'm going to Disney January 1 through 7, and I was wondering if any rides will be closed or down for refurbishment at this time. Also, since I'm going with a school group, I will not have tickets until I get there. How can I buy a memory maker before I go, and who do I contact?
For the memory maker, you can do it on My Disney Experience, but you'll have to specify the dates. What were specific dates of travel?
January 1 to 7.
1 to 7. Okay, so in the Magic Kingdom, Liberty Square Riverboat, Stitch's Great Escape, all of Typhoon Lagoon. Oh, no, you barely missed the Hall of Presidents one. And that seems to be it for now.
I was noticing, because I was helping someone plan their trip, and during that time, it seems like touring plans is much higher than I've seen at that time, because I was there that time last year.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of your park attendance is projected to be higher that week.
And so it's a combination of the way that the New Year's Day falls. Also, this year is one of those quirky things that happens maybe once a decade, where the Walt Disney World Marathon is scheduled as early as it could possibly be. So I think that people start getting in on the 4th for the marathon.
All right. I wouldn't know.
Yeah. I think the marathon weekend this year is the 7th. The marathon is the 8th, which means the half is on the 7th, which means the 10K is on the 6th, the 5K is on the 5th, which means you're probably getting in on the 3rd or the 4th in order to pick up your race packet and have maybe a few hours to relax before you start running 67 miles that weekend or whatever.
Do people run the gauntlet? Do each of the races?
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez, a lot of people do. Yeah. So New Year's Day is on the Sunday. A lot of people go home on the Monday, but they're just trading places with people who are coming for literally on the Tuesday for the marathon weekend. In fact, I would not be surprised if there are a whole bunch of people that just spend New Year's Eve there and stay all the way through till the end of the marathon and leave on like January 9th.
Yeah, that would make sense with the way it's set up this year.
Yeah. And this is about as early as it can be in the year.
Brian has a really interesting question.
Whoa, he blew that one out. Well, Brian!
Well, because it sounded like I was in the middle of the Twister ride that doesn't exist anymore.
Thank God.
I missed that ride.
Well, you're the one.
I'm the one person.
Well, you never went to Universal to ride it. Yes. So you clearly don't miss it.
It was my fault for never going to Universal. Brian has a great question. He said, if Walt was born in this generation instead of the last, do you think he would have created the Disney empire from scratch in this day and age? Could he have created the same interest in family entertainment? Could he raise the capital required to build Disneyland at WDW? Could he find enough land? Or would the void have been filled by someone in his absence? Or do you think it was just because Walt was born at the right time?
Well, that's a heck of a question.
The answer to that is no one knows. Sorry.
Lynn?
Yeah. If you look back at American history, Walt came along. I think it's not just Walt. I think the Beatles came along at exactly the right time. If you look at post-World War II America, Walt came into that having been somewhat established with the films, but he, in the mid to late 50s and early 60s, he built his theme park just as the baby boomers had come home and created this whole generation of young children that needed entertainment. And you look at the things that the convergence of things that happened around him. Television became popular. The car became popular. The United States built out the interstate system to get people around to California. A ton of things went right. And it was the same thing with the Beatles. I mean, if you think the Beatles hit in the early 60s and you march back 18 years, it's essentially the end of World War II. So the baby boomers were pretty much primed for that sort of experience with music. And I'm not saying that, you know, that the Beatles weren't good. The Beatles were fantastic. There were a lot of other things. Luck has a lot to do with
people were in search of family entertainment, also to kind of raise their kids on something different. We're seeing that a lot now with nostalgia driven entertainment.
Yeah.
And my theory on it, it's not just my theory, I've heard other people's theories on it, is it's based on 9/11, which is, for my generation, is until September 11th of 2001, pretty much someone who was under 30, even I'd say under 20, lived in a world where nothing ever bad was happening. Yes, there was stuff, but it wasn't at home.
Yeah.
So if you look at what's popular with nostalgia-driven entertainment, it is all pre-9/11 based nostalgia. Whether that is even like the Pokemon Beyond the Edge,
like early Backstreet Boys, but not like later Backstreet Boys.
It's horrible.
I mean, early Britney Spears, later Britney Spears, right?
Yeah, early 90s to it's Fuller House. It's all these this entertainment that was created. I think it is something mentally that's in us. So I do think there would be a place for this kind of. It wouldn't be the same, but this kind of entertainment, whether Walt was around now or then. Would someone else be doing it? I don't know about the theme park side because there's really very few people who have done it like that. You see, maybe in Abu Dhabi. That's about it. And you'd say Universal, but those are all direct. I mean, most of the people that are building these things came from the Disney, you know, life. So people, I mean, the main people running Universal came from Disney. The main, you know, that's just how it runs now, at least. And vice versa. So all the people that run from Disney came from Universal at this point.
If I were to look at it objectively.
Right.
Not like as a fan of Disney. So there's kind of two ways to approach that question. And one is, would there be a fan base of Disney as there is now? And that's more to what Lynn's talking about when it was kind of primed at that. And so it built like a culture around it.
Yeah.
But if you look at what is Walt Disney World, it's an amusement park. You know, he didn't create that concept of, you know, even with like circuses and parks and stuff like that, it was just he perfected it in a way. Now, with all the corporate money and everything that we have now, do I think that there would be something like that? Yes. Yeah, I think that there would be a huge focal point destination amusement park that some corporate interest
for families.
Yeah, for family that someone would have built something like that. Now, it may not have the fan base that Walt Disney World has, people, you know, basing a lot of their decisions around vacations annually and things like that. But I still think that there could be a giant corporate park that has a broader reach of a brand other than just a local Six Flags kind of thing.
To answer Brian's part of the question where he said, if Walt was born in this generation instead of the last, I still think Walt, knowing his kind of tenacity and audacity, would have still built something. It may look differently because of time looks different.
But. Right.
Millennial Walt is like the best concept in my head right now.
I was down in Orlando a couple weeks ago going through the Buzz Price archives. Do you guys know who Buzz is?
Yeah, I do, but not these guys do.
So Buzz is one of the guys who Walt hired originally to investigate where to put Disneyland.
The property.
So he came from Stanford Research, and obviously Buzz's research was correct on, you know, where to put Disneyland and everything. So Buzz had done this research around where the interstates were going and where the population was shifting and so on, and decided where to pick Disneyland. But based on that, Walt had asked Stanford Research and Buzz's company to do, hundreds of project analyses throughout Walt's life and Buzz's life. So when Buzz Price died, he willed all of his papers. And I'm talking about like 140 moving boxes of papers to the University of Central Florida Library. And they've actually cataloged each of them. And I was down there doing some research for a talk I'm going to give later on next month. But one of the interesting things that I found out on this was how serious Walt was about building Epcot.
Yeah. Oh, it was going to happen.
If he had lived, it was going to happen. And I'm not talking like, you know, like most of us, when we think about, you know, Walt and Epcot, we all have that image of him in front of that very big board.
Yeah,
The big Florida, you know, and we all think that, you know, it's this concept drawing, and that's as far as he got. But I mean, there were thousands of pages of documentation on this where he had gone to like the state government, the federal government, where he had all this stuff planned out. And if you read the documents that they had just sort of circulated privately to lawmakers, it was, you know, talking about things like self-driving cars and instant communication between homes and businesses and schools and hospitals and things like that. And I mean, even the climate control dome over the over the city. He had talked about all these things. And I was joking with Jamil the other day. I'm like, he's like a combination of Steve Jobs and Elon Musk together, you know, with the vision of these things. So, you know, would he have built a theme park? I don't know, but he would have built a city.
Right.
You know? And that's the thing. So
that's very now. So
urban revitalization.
If he were someone that was of age to do something like that, right now it kind of would be a perfect time for him to be alive. It may not be a theme park, but like Lynn just said, but he would be doing something.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hope that answered your question. Interesting topic. We could maybe take that longer.
Our laptops may have like illuminated Mickey ears instead of apples if it were now.
I kind
of
want that.
Well, I've got a couple prototypes.
Okay. All right.
Terry, moving on.
I Heart Red Pandas asks if I...
No. Sorry. Next question. I don't like red pandas.
You don't like the old Firefox?
Vicious. All right.
All right. I Heart Red Pandas asks...
No.
If I wanted an exhaustive guide to watering holes all around Walt Disney World, where would be my go-to reference?
Just go to Animal Kingdom and follow the wildebeest.
No, I think where they're trying to lead.
I know.
Where are they trying to lead, Will?
Just go check out our friend Drunk at Disney.
Yeah.
He's got a good book, Drinking at Disney.
Yeah, I think he may have put someone up to that one. But good guy. Really like him. His book is out. It is called Drinking at Disney. Disney, and it's by Drunk at Disney, and you can find that on Amazon or however you get books. So check that out. Good friend of the show.
Yeah, that's probably the most exhaustive guide.
But if you want to pick one, how about pick one watering hole, not Miss Watering Hole, Will?
Well, I said this last time. You know, no, I said on Twitter, I think. Okay. Someone asked what the best bars were, and I said in parks, obviously Cava is the best. And out of parks, I'm really high on Abracadabar right now.
Lynn, you got one?
Bars. In park, obviously, I think La Cava as well. Yep. Out of the park, I don't really have a preference.
Yeah, they're all kind of... I haven't been to Abracadabar, but
I think we've talked about how young STK's bar is. I don't know that I would. I'm too old for that, but yeah.
All right, the Pop Century Bar. is that still there?
Yeah. Actually, I kind of like the bar over at Cabana Bay over at Universal.
I like that
we
one.
We do like that one.
Yeah, but that's an Uber ride away.
Yeah, it not really worth an Uber ride for it, but it's nice. All right.
I liked the new lounge at inside Tiffin's. Okay. That was kind of fun. It was kind of a nice... I feel like there's going to be a lot of Disney fans who are very sad about Avatar. They're going to find themselves in that bar in a couple of years.
Oh, no. Yeah, exactly. A couple of years.
There's going to be 2017, depressingly drinking looking at Avatar
this
World.
This is what we waited for.
And I've always loved the pina coladas at the bar there, right as you wait for Ohana. Not exactly the best environment, visually stimulating, but you know, if you don't have the 4 hours to invest of your life to wait for a table downstairs,
yeah, exactly.
That's at Trader Sam's,
and that Sam's is cool. I really prefer the Disneyland Sam's, but that one there is fun. It's loud and kind of obnoxious, but it's good.
Loud and small.
Yep, and not as smaller than the Disneyland one or same, but it's not set up. It doesn't feel as real. I know that sounds a bizarre thing to say.
The one in Disneyland, you really feel like you're in a tiki bar, yeah.
With effects. This one more feels like effects with a bar. All right, Terry.
Favorite Twitter handle in history? @TheOtherLogan wants to know.
We've tweeted before.
Can I apply the amount paid from a trip I took earlier this year toward an annual pass?
Have you already taken the trip?
That's what it sounds like. So no. And even upgrading your ticket is kind of a pain. We've tried it with Will, and they were not thrilled to do it. So depends on the cast member you get. So no, your answer is no. Moving on, Terry.
Craig Wiseman wants to know, how do you answer, "Oh, you're going to Disney again"?
I think it means, "Oh, you're going to Disney again."
Oh, you're going to Disney again?
That's where it. So we get to say it's part of our job. So it really makes that conversation a little shorter. I'm sure that's similar with Lynn. But for you common folk who don't have a podcast, start a podcast. Doesn't matter if anyone's listening to it. And then that's your excuse. Just say it's research.
Like, that's what I say when I go to the liquor store five times a week.
That's what you tell my wife.
Oh, no, it's for the podcast.
Right. For not this podcast.
Well, sometimes it feels like it's for this podcast.
So
I think you mean the word you're looking for is because of.
Right.
Right.
So for us, it really never came up. People always knew we were crazy people, so it was no big deal. But in general, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, people say it's where you prefer to take your vacation. Some people are going to like it. Some people don't. Say, get off me, man. Quit being a bully.
Yeah, say, oh, you're going to the beach again?
Oh.
Yeah, that would be me.
There you go. Right. That's a response.
Or just be like, why are you judging my vacations? Like,
why do you care?
Yeah, we all vacation in our own way. Sorry.
Jerks. I'm going to jerks in the Caicos.
Jerks in Caicos?
That's where you're going.
To do the commercial for
that's
that?
A new morning show. I'm Jerks.
And I'm Caicos.
Can't even put that in there. I don't think Jerks, I don't think can be my name. Yeah, it's a perfect morning show radio name.
Jerks and Caicos.
Yes. All right.
Lila wants to know who to talk to about a skin condition when staying on site, where everything has to be clean and without fragrances or dyes.
What to do?
Who does she let at Disney know so the room is safe for her?
Okay.
I would definitely make a note of that on the reservation and then call the resort 5 days in advance and let them know that the stuff has to be laundered separately.
So I feel that's probably not an uncommon request from visitors, you know, just knowing the volume of people that come through.
Yeah. Do any of the rooms they offer, I know this may not be specific for this issue, but for in general, do any of the hotels offer specifically like hypoallergenic rooms?
I've never seen it as a characteristic, no.
All right. For some reason, I feel like I did. Maybe it was a swan and dolphin. That may be the only ones I've ever seen, but definitely ask. All right.
So here's a question that kind of comes from that, is I feel like anyone I ever talked to that has a bad experience at Walt Disney World, it's normally because they didn't kind of know before what to do. Where do you get the phone number to the resort?
Google has it. Just and the thing is, when you call the resort, you actually don't get the resort.
Right,
exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Central reservations, but they will they'll either make note or they'll actually transfer you on. So it's like another layer of people shielding the front desk from the bajillion calls that they would get.
It does drive me crazy though.
Yeah, it's fine.
When I'm trying to make a come on, just give me the front desk. Yeah, drive me out of my mind. All right. So hopefully that helps you out, Terry.
Ben Bowers wants to know, what are the odds of the new AP20 discounts aren't limited time and will carry on for the foreseeable future?
Nobody knows. I do think that Disney's attendance is, everyone I've talked to says that their business is down a couple percent this year so far. And I think that trend is going to continue for Disney. In fact, if you look at 2017, there's really nothing that they've got opening up. Maybe until the end of the year. I mean, the stuff I'm hearing about Avatar is still late 2017. If late 2017 means early 2018.
Right. And they did announce Rivers of Light, right? But it's like crazy far away still. It's like March.
Yeah, it's like announcing our landing on Mars.
Right.
I mean, sure.
We're going to do it. It's theoretically going to happen.
Eventually, yeah. And although I did hear, the next couple of weeks for testing on that. But right. The people that I talked to, inside Disney said that they will literally announce it 2 weeks after everyone knows it's running every day. that's how they're going to make sure that they get the next announcement right. But they've really got nothing in 2017 to bring people in. And I think that the management has now learned this lesson where you have to have a major new ride every year, every 18 months to bring people back. It's the lesson that Universal seems to have at least not forgot if they didn't love it.
And Universal kind of lives by what even that Disney World idea, which is you almost don't announce a ride until it's ready or until it's really close to being ready. Because they kind of got stuck with that Kong when soft opening lasts forever, but they didn't even announce, everyone knew Kong was coming and they didn't even announce it until the building was done. It was ready to go. So,
I wouldn't be surprised to see some more discounts from discounts from Disney, especially if 2017 opens softer than they would like. Because again, they need a new ride to sell people on.
Yeah, indications are pointing that way too.
Well, and I think that 20% discount is what Disneyland pass holders have always gotten. So I think they're just kind of lining the two up.
Yeah,
it makes it a little bit more appealing though.
Yeah,
I mean it's something. It feels better than just tax.
What does it all cover? Is it on any purchase? The 20%?
It's on merch, food and drink, and a lot of the Disney owned or controlled table service restaurants. Yeah, gotcha.
It almost makes it difficult to justify Tables in Wonderland.
Right. We didn't do it this year so far.
I haven't redeemed mine yet.
This is actually a question that I think many of us have encountered, especially us that like to travel in the off season. So Aaron asks about dance and cheerleading weekends. And she was And she was wondering how much the dance and cheerleading
that
competition.
That sounded way creepy. I just more meant.
Oh, yeah. Dance and cheerleading weekends?
I just more meant like I've been there multiple times during this. Not because of it. Just
she wants to know what impact they have on the crowds of the parks. We're looking to go to WDW for a long weekend, either February 1 to 5 or 8 to 12. The dance competition is February 3 to 5. Would the cheerleading competition be 11 to 12? Which weekend would be better? We are planning on staying in Animal Kingdom Lodge and spending 3 days at the parks. Thank you.
So dancers versus cheerleaders. It's a movie. It's on Sci-Fi Network.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's good that they've already picked their hotel, but I was going to say be wary of which hotel you pick during that time.
I've stayed at Pop Century during this before, and it's the entire reason I'm now a Disney Vacation Club owner. And so if you really are thinking about talking your spouse into buying the Disney Vacation Club, I'd recommend staying at Pop Century or All-Star. Then you will definitely get what you want.
Yeah, you definitely notice it. Both dance and especially Hollywood. Well, they're doing it at Hollywood Studios this year, or are they doing it at Wide World of Sports? Does it say?
I'm sure it's at Wide World of Sports.
Okay, it's not in the Indiana Jones thing anymore.
No. Remember, they built that other pavilion specifically for that, so they wouldn't have to.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I haven't been there since it was like invading Hollywood Studios, and that was intense. It doesn't bother me, but it's a ton of kids chanting all day long.
You're not a kid hater?
I'm not a kid hater. I love kids, but it definitely it changes the atmosphere.
Well, it's also because it's like a giant
groups
trip
of kids.
For
right.
groups, and so it's like summer camp at Disney. Where they're
sounds like the greatest.
They're trying to, you know, they're having a good time, but they have like chaperones. They're not necessarily with their parents.
And that's
like
the one thing that really I've noticed when they've been there is a couple of things. One, you're ending up with 12 kids with maybe two adults
to the hall and stuff.
And you end up with, and then you end up, this is, I'm going to get complaints about this. I know it's coming. But there's a lot of times when chaperones on these trips forget that they're actually there for the children. And they end up over at Epcot enjoying themselves a little too much and just kind of forget about the kids. So then there's large groups of kids just kind of
free roam.
It gets intense.
Yeah.
Mm. So
Lynn, what do you think?
Bueller.
I was trying to think about how I'm going to talk about cheerleading and young kids competitions without coming off sounding like Donald Trump at a beauty contest.
I've already been there today, sir.
Crowds, so yeah. Huge crowds.
I took your spot
huge,
there already.
Huge crowds. You'll see them in the parks. I agree. You shouldn't stay at a value or a moderate resort. Although, you know, if you're going to stay at a moderate resort, you're probably better off with taking your chances with a business conference
right.
at Cornwall Springs versus, yeah. Other than that, you know, the deluxe will be fine. The good news is that even if there are a lot of kids down for those types of sporting events, chances are they'll be spending most of their time in the competition itself, not on the rides. So you tend to hear them because they tend to be loud, but in terms of overall numbers, they're probably not as big as they sound. And that's what I would say.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for listener questions today. Hopefully we answered some things. Terry threw in some good questions, some more deep intellectual questions.
No curveballs.
Yeah, that sounds like something more from Lynn's other podcast, which is why we couldn't commentate as well. All right, Lynn, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that's going to do it for today's show. I'm Logan Seculo.
I'm Will Haynes.
And I'm Terry Weaver.
Special thanks to the greatest band in podcasting, Off Kilter, and also to ourselves at Laugh-O-Gram Studios, laughagramstore.com, and off to Neverland Travel. If you're planning your next vacation, you know what to do, as Will likes to say.
All you got to do is pack.
All you got to do is pack at go2neverland.com, and we will talk to you, and we will see you, and we'll hear from you probably before on the next show. You must go and-